Grow Great, the podcast, episode 4037. Two powerful forces of successful business and career building. It is part two. We're going to put a bow on this one and wrap it up. Last time we talked about the power of overcoming loneliness, and today it's going to be about confidence and optimism, and we will do it next. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Kentrow, your host here at Grow Great, the podcast. Last week on Tuesday, November the 8th, 2016, actually around 3 a.m. Eastern, on the morning of Wednesday, November the 9th, America elected a new president, Donald Trump. Every presidential election results in a lot of people who are crushed by the defeat and pessimistic about the future, and quite often dug in with a resolve that they are going to combat the winner. But on the other hand, there are the victors, those people that are energized and enthused and optimistic at the prospect of, well, everything just being right with the world now that their candidate has risen to power. It is how things go here in the United States. If you are listening from abroad, welcome inside the Yellow Studio. But no doubt you have been paying attention to all of this hubbub. People put their trust in their candidate, most often seeing things in a very, well, what seems to be a very binary way. You win or you lose. You succeed or you fail. You're either optimistic or you are pessimistic. During election night, the futures markets crashed because worldwide players, well, they didn't have any idea. Once they felt like Trump would win, they're like, man, we have no idea what this gentleman is likely to do. Uncertainty. It scares, it scares all of us, but it especially scares investors. And as things wore on and speeches were delivered by Trump, then by Clinton, and eventually President Obama, well, Wall Street and worldwide markets, they rebounded. In fact, very nicely, I might add. Bursts of emotions can drive the smartest among us. Well, they do. Emotion does drive the smartest among us. Every market is largely driven by how investors feel. Pessimism fuels panic. Optimism fuels bold moves. Serendipity does sometimes happen when you're podcasting, like now. I mean, I didn't plan. I didn't really map out today's topic. Well, I mapped out the topic. I just didn't map it out to coincide with this election, much less the lessons that we're likely going to learn over the coming months and years. I didn't have in mind the lessons that we can learn from candidate, now president-elect, Trump. Yeah, you know, but sometimes these things, they land in your lap and they kind of work themselves out. So, hey, let's go with it. Today, it's about optimism. If you go back and you listen to episode 4036, do that if you missed it, because that's part one. This is part two in this series. And in episode 4036, we talked about overcoming loneliness. We're talking about these two powerful forces of successful business and successful career building, overcoming loneliness and embracing optimism, having confidence through optimism. Now, let me tell you right here up front, in spite of prior remarks about the election, I am apolitical. That means I don't care about politics. I'm interested enough to keep up with it. But, I did stay up until after 3 a.m. Central Time. I'm in Dallas, Texas, on election night to watch this thing unfold and finally reach a conclusion. But I don't do political commentary, and I don't surround myself with people who do. You didn't come here for that, and for good reason. But there are some great lessons that we can learn about optimism, though, from this year's election. Yes, there are. Hang with me. Optimism talk requires a little bit of adversity talk. I mean, after all, if it weren't for adversity, optimism would be a no-brainer, wouldn't it? If you didn't have any challenges, if you didn't have any obstacles, well, what reason would you have to not be optimistic? I mean, nobody would struggle with confidence or optimism if we never had a challenge. Love him or hate him, Donald Trump is not only confident, but he's optimistic. During the past 18 months plus of working to become elected as the 45th president of the United States, Donald Trump was challenged with rolling waves. I'm talking tidal waves of opposition, missteps, issues that would seem to sink any candidacy, but not his. He went toe-to-toe with his adversaries. He went toe-to-toe with all of his adversities, and he remained his candid, blunt, aggressive self, determined to do it the way that he wanted. I'm not telling you to agree with that, and I'm not telling you that I agree with it. I'm just stating what is, to me, obvious. Challenges that would have most certainly made other people kind of cower, they didn't seem to faze this guy. He just kept going. Political insiders from both parties, both Republicans and Democrats, they tipped their hat to his work ethic. You heard it repeatedly and remarked about how many appearances he would make, no matter what. I mean, just seemingly tireless on the campaign trail. And we could talk about resilience. We could talk about tenacity. We could talk about grit. But they really all stem from the man's supreme confidence driven by his optimism that he would win. Much of the nation was shocked on election night. Many people, well, they accused Trump. They didn't think he was optimistic. They thought he was delusional. And they thought there is no way, no possible way this man can win. Never underestimate a determined person full of confidence and optimism. And yes, I'm using those terms somewhat synonymously today, confidence and optimism, because I'm really not sure how you can have one without the other. Think about your current adversity. Think about the self-doubt. Think about the fear. Think about the anxiety that creeps into your head. Very few things are more powerful contributors to our failure than our own inner critic. Just this month, there was an article posted over at Psychology Today. I'll put a link in the show notes today. Just go to the website, growgreat.com. Over in the margin, you'll see a place where you can type in the episode number. Just type in the number 4037, and it'll take you there. And this was an article about how we can often feel undeserving. We can kind of feel like imposters. And it cited some rather big people who sometimes feel like they're imposters. So even the most successful among us can suffer this. Success doesn't always help us cure these kinds of challenges. Sometimes it just adds fuel to the fire, and we think, you know, we're not deserving of this. I suspect that we all have way too much head trash that really needs to be taken out to the curb already, but sometimes we're not sure how. I got my hand in the air. Some people have described Mr. Trump as a sociopath. That is defined as an antisocial personality disorder where people tend to lie, break laws, act impulsively, lack regard for their own safety or the safety of others. I'm not qualified to say, but I am observant, and I am qualified to say that I witnessed this much about the man, Donald Trump. The man won't quit. He just keeps forging ahead in spite of what other people think, in spite of what other people say, in spite of what other people do. He just rolls the way he's going to roll without regard to what his critics might think that he should do or should say. And in the face of people making fun of him, mocking him, confronting him, he decides his own course of combat, and he just keeps on swinging. And no, it's not always pretty, even though I will confess it's often entertaining. Yeah, sometimes he's repugnant. But he doesn't have a lease on that, at least not among political figures. I think political figures all over the world, many of them are repugnant. But he's like the Energizer Bunny. He just refuses to get down, slow down, or stop. And during the campaign season, I would often wonder why a guy would endure this kind of grief. And in fact, I still wonder. But he did. Good for him. And he clearly resonated with plenty of American citizens because he got 55 plus million votes, giving him a comfortable victory in the election that nobody thought was possible except him. And that, ladies and gentlemen, no matter where you stand politically, is undeniable. Mr. Trump may have often been the only guy who thought he could win, but he just pounded it and he pounded it and he pounded it. And he delivered the same message over and over. And radio talk show hosts and media people of every ilk made fun of how seemingly delusional he was and how over the top his confidence appeared to be and the language that he used. It may be the best example I have seen of supreme optimism. What can we learn? How can we harness this power of optimism, this powerful force for ourselves and for our businesses? In a 2000 book that hit the market, great leaders see the future first, taking your organization to the top in 5 revolutionary steps. It was a book written by Carolyn Corbin. And the title and the book, they are an optimistic view of leadership with an emphasis on the people being led and the responsibility of the leader to properly do that, to properly serve those being led, which is why I'm a big fan of the book. A major component of effective leadership is exactly what Ms. Corbin writes about, and that is belief. Great leaders see the future first. Belief. Belief stems from vision. Belief stems from optimism. And that's why Ms. Corbin correctly asserts that great leaders see the future first. They see it. They believe it. They're confident about it. They're optimistic about it. Even if you hate Donald Trump, you must acknowledge that he has proven able to do all of those things in his own quest for the presidency. Is there any doubt he saw himself being elected? Now, people can theorize, well, there's no way that he didn't intend to win. He didn't think he would win. I disagree. He endured a whole lot of grief for a guy just not caring to win. Can we apply this to our career? Can we apply this to our business? Of course we can. Maybe a guy like Trump, maybe he has some natural wiring that just enables him to block out the naysayers. Maybe his lifelong career in the toughest market on the planet, New York City, maybe that taught him a few things about what it takes to make it. I mean, there's no doubt it did. Maybe he's delusional, and maybe he's delusional in a way that serves him and serves his success. Maybe it's all that and more. I don't know. I just know I'm determined for us to learn some things about optimism, not from him, just some things in general about optimism that can serve us. First, here it is. You must believe. You, the business owner, you, the CEO, you, the leader, you must believe. Optimism, not only can it be, it must be a choice. And maybe it's not an easy choice for you, but it is a choice nonetheless. Pessimism, that is also a choice. Admittedly, for many of us, a much easier choice, a path of least resistance choice. I could sit down with you and I could throw out some hypothetical problem followed by asking you to tell me something good that might come from it. You're going to struggle. Guaranteed, because I've done this. I throw out some hypothetical and I tell you, tell me something good that'll come from that. And you're going to sit there and you're going to blink your eyes and you're going to look up at the ceiling and you may wring your hands and it's going to tax your brain and it's going to tax your imagination. you're going to have to really work at it. Now, I can follow that up and I can give you a completely different hypothetical problem. And I can follow that problem up and ask you to tell me something bad that might come from it. You're, without hesitation, you're going to start firing off almost immediately. And you're likely going to have more than one. You're likely going to be able to just barrage me with, well, this thing could happen and that could happen. And you're just going to pepper me with bad outcomes. And you might not be able to stop. They'll just flood your mind. You know I'm right. That's how it goes. In a nanosecond, we can think of horrible outcomes. But it takes us a whole lot longer and a whole lot more effort and a whole lot more thought to consider what might go well, what good might come from it. Now, if you're the exception to that rule, and I think that is a rule, consider yourself lucky or weird. Who cares? Embrace it. Our newly elected president, he sure did. Putting yourself in a good position for success is really important. What does that mean? What's required? Well, I may not know specifically because I don't know your specific situation, but generally speaking, I can tell you that I know that you must have some talent for a thing. Capacity is important. Now, you don't have to be the sharpest knife in the drawer to run a successful business, but you got to be a knife. Capacity is important. Talent, skill, it's important. When I was a teenager, I would envy the guys who were fast runners. Now, I was always quick, pretty good, you know, for the first few yards, but I'm talking about those guys who could sprint and had it going on. In fact, just yesterday, the Dallas Cowboys beat the Pittsburgh Steelers at Pittsburgh, and Zeke Elliott, this running back for the Cowboys, is just a stud. I mean, the guy is, you know, he's a big guy. He's 220 plus and has got just blazing speed. And that's what I'm talking about. I mean, these guys, he can bust through the line. And I mean, defensive backs cannot catch this guy. I couldn't imagine as a young guy, I certainly can't now. I couldn't imagine being able to do what they do because I never could do it. It just wasn't a capacity that I had. Now, I could have spent hours and hours training. I could have gotten a coach, a track coach. I could have done everything that anybody and everybody who's an expert in that field would tell me to do to improve. And you know what? Still not going to be a fast sprinter. Oh, yeah. No question. I could have likely shaved off some time. I could have gotten faster. But I'd still be slow. You have to soar with your strengths. You've got to bet on your capacities. You can't embrace the power of optimism by betting on capacities that just don't exist. You can't be something you're not. Now, we sometimes want to be whatever we think is needed or whatever other people think is needed, especially as business owners, especially as CEOs. Some of the hardest decisions facing CEOs and owners or founders is that morphing to become what the company now may need, not what the company may have needed earlier. And it's why you see so many founders sometimes struggle. And you see the really good ones acknowledge it, realize this is now not my cup of tea, and now I need professional, I need gunslinger kind of help, and they can step back. Time and place matter. The founding visionary was probably the first to believe. And so the company was founded by this person, and she did indeed see the future first, and she got the business off the ground because of that. And the first $10 million, maybe in annual revenue, was largely fueled by her determination and her optimism because it was her idea. Yeah, but then this invisible wall hit her in the face, kind of like mile marker 22 in a marathon, and she stumbled. And she grabbed her knees and she started grasping for air and didn't really know what to do except just try to keep running. And maybe after a bit of running under those conditions, she realizes, a more professional management approach might now be what's needed. But it's not a skill she has. And it's not a skill she even wants. It's something that just isn't who she is. Oh, she could force it. Like somebody with my kind of speed trying to become a sprinter. Be a colossal waste of time. Or she can realize that it may be time to bring in somebody else. Often a really tough decision because ego and pride, they get in the way. But if her optimism continues to run high, she's going to find a way for the overall good of the company and for her own career to show world-class leadership by turning the reins over to somebody else. It all begins and it all ends with knowing ourselves. She knows herself. She accepts who she is. She accepts what she is. She accepts what she's best at. How can she be confident? How can she possibly believe that success is possible or even probable or assured? Have you ever had an idea that you really believed in, but other people didn't? What did you do? Was your optimism crushed or did you press on? Did you ignore the critics? That's exactly how Trump handled it. He largely ignored it. He just maintained his confidence and his optimism. I mean, we can just use him to help ourselves in that regard. If he can endure all the public scrutiny, the shaming to become elected president of the United States, don't you think you can endure whatever criticism you face? Of course you can. I posted a photograph, I think just yesterday over at LinkedIn. I've got a photograph of my tribe, my family. There are 10 people, not including me, who are my family. My son and his wife and their 3 children, my daughter and her husband and their 2 children. There are these 10 people in this tribe, 10 people that I primarily care about and care what they think. Now, there are other people beyond that, but that's kind of the first circle. And I really care about my influence and my impact with these people. So I posed the question with this graphic, if this is my tribe that I really care about and I care what they think, then why do I care what anybody else thinks? Listen, I got head trash just like you do. Sometimes complete strangers that I've never met, something through social media can hit me and I'm like, and suddenly I seem to care what this complete stranger who has no impact at all in my life other than the fact that I let them, and now I'm all twisted up and I'm wrapped up in caring what they think. Most of us do that. But this isn't about becoming the president of the United States. This is about you. It's about me. It's about us. And how we can leverage these two powerful sources of overcoming loneliness and increasing our confidence through optimism. Grow Great is about business and career building. But many ideas transcend those endeavors and they cross over into our personal lives, just like I spoke about with my family. I've yet to find a way to separate those, really. A bad day at home translates into a bad day at work and vice versa. And for good reason. Because we're people and we have feelings and we have emotions and we have thoughts and we have fear and anxieties and obstacles and joy and humor and fun, despair, pain, sorrow, and all of that and more, all of that can happen in a single day. Well, no wonder it can be tough to get and to sustain momentum. Optimism deals with our perceived outcomes. Let me repeat that. Optimism deals with our perceived outcomes. I want to put a heavy emphasis on the word perceived because many times we don't have any idea how it's going to turn out. And that's when our brains can work against us, like that scenario that I said, if I could drop some hypothetical at you and say, oh, give me some good outcomes, and you would struggle. I could say, give me some bad outcomes, and they're just going to start popping into your mind, and it's like you can't stop them. our brains work against us. Now, they seem to be working for us because we could argue, well, they're preparing us for the worst possible outcome. All those bridges up ahead, they start coming at us really fast. And they've all got names. Here's the bridge. Here's the bridge coming up fast. It's coming up fast. Failure. That's the sign on that bridge. Okay, here's another one. It's coming up fast. Another one's coming up fast. Despair. There's a good bridge. And here comes another one. It's coming just blazing speed. Pain. These are not bridges that have great, wonderful, happy names. Mark Twain said, I've had a lot of worries in my life, most of which never happened. How can we alter our perceptions about possible outcomes? The mind that can envision something, dream something, craft something, surely can figure out a way to see success instead of failure. If we can imagine bad things, we can imagine good things. But folks, it's our habit. I'm telling you, it's your habit. Now, I'm not going to attempt to train you, for that matter. I'm really doing a bad job of probably attempting to train myself to be optimistic in a few minutes, because I don't know that that's possible. But we should at least talk about the possibility and the opportunity and at least kind of get the ball rolling in that direction. Now, what you do with it from there is up to you. I'm going to urge you to do something with it. Let me hand you this ball, and I want you to run with it. I want you to run with it for a while. Hold on to it for a while. People who have spent their lives fretting about all of the bad things that might happen just aren't likely going to change. Fact, truth is, none of us are just up and going to change. Now, when we've got something that's working against us, like pessimism, we should. But, you know, it may require professional help for some of us. That's fine. Seek it. Get it. It may be worthwhile so that you don't continue to sabotage yourself. Come on, life's hard enough without you battling yourself. Business people, come on, we've got plenty enough working against us. The market is tough. Finding, training, and retaining qualified people, that can be tough. Sales, well, that's plenty tough. Marketing, that's tough too. Getting the work done effectively, getting the work done efficiently, that's very tough. Why should we add to our own head trash? And why should we add that to the whole mix of all the stuff we got working against us? Why think the worst when the best may be just as easy to consider and tons more fun? Do me a favor. Google the phrase inner critic. Don't do it right now, but later on. Google the phrase inner critic, and that's going to give you a starting place. There's plenty of reading I could suggest, but through the years I've learned that, you know, what might resonate with me, it may not resonate with you. Hey, listen, it's among the many reasons that you see so many diet books. Why do you see so many diet books? Those of us that battle weight and want to try to get some grip on that, I mean, isn't there just one book that'll tell us? No, because one size doesn't necessarily fit all, because some people are attracted to one thing. Other people, well, they're attracted to something different. And then there's the way that the message is delivered. If you listen to me with any regularity, then you're likely attracted to how I roll. Not everybody is. It's hard to believe, I know. Incredibly hard to believe that I'm just not everybody's cup of tea. But ditto on the verbiage out there on diet. Ditto on the verbiage out there on inner critic, being optimistic, and all this other stuff that can disrupt our efforts. I'm telling you, give it effort. That's the main thing. Give it effort. Do not take the challenge of overcoming your pessimism lightly. You need to be serious about this. You need to take this seriously. You don't need to slough this off and go, it's a bunch of hoo-ha. No, it's not. You need to be determined to rid yourself of pessimism if it continually plagues you. I'm not talking about these momentary lapses. We all have those. Nobody, including Donald Trump, is going to be always optimistic and think that they're always going to win. He's got fears too. He's got anxieties too. Every time people ask him about it, it's interesting to me. He won't talk about them. Yeah, maybe something smart to that. See the future first. See the future first and make sure that you see what can go right and why. You're smart. You're not just hoping things are going to work out. Review your plan. Review the strategy that you've mapped out. You came up with a plan for good reason. Logic was likely behind much of it. Do not undervalue your emotions. Passion means something. Now, I'm not the person going to tell you, now chase your passion and the money will follow. No, it may not. But passion means something. No, it's not everything, but it is something, and it is something significant. Feelings and emotions, they're fuel to our decisions, to our choices, to our actions. You experience that every day, right? You're feeling pretty good about things. The morning is just tripping right along and it's just going pretty swimmingly. And then your cell phone rings. Maybe it's a member of your executive team and they're informing you of a sudden problem. A company truck has been involved in a fatal wreck. A key customer, they've canceled a purchase order. A major client, they've decided they're going to take their business somewhere else. A supplier cannot meet a critical deadline. A key manager died of a heart attack over the weekend. Sudden problems erupt, and then they disrupt our emotions. And our good morning suddenly turns sullen or worse. And it puts our mind into this completely different state than it was just a nanosecond ago. Now we're fighting to just think clearly. Everybody's experienced, you've experienced this. You may be experiencing this right now. And you will continue to experience it. If not at the levels that I've just described, some other level, some other problem that may better fit you. I just tried to throw a number of them out there to give you food for thought. We all have to deal with the unexpected. How can you grab and maintain optimism when that's how your day is going? Well, that's what I want to talk to you about here, and I'm going to give you some tips. First of all, you need time to process. Whether the event is sudden and unexpected or it's obvious and it was expected, your mind is like your computer. It's a processor. Now, I'm working off of an iMac and it has what's called an i7 processor. That's the whiz bang fast super duper job as I sit here and record this on Monday, November the 14th, 2016. The speed with which you process, much like my computer and your computer, it's not static and it's not uniform. I throw a whole bunch of graphics, throw a whole bunch of video at your computer, and the response time is going to be slower than when you're just typing in a Word document or you're viewing your email. Because some problems demand greater processing power. We all know this. You don't have to be a techno nerd to figure that out. Open enough programs and challenge your computer to tackle multiple tasks all at the same time, your computer is going to behave much like your brain. It's going to bog down because the processor is working really hard to catch up, and you're going to get, well, what we Mac people get. We get that spinning beach ball. That's what happens when we have to deal with challenges. Some of them are big, like our video programs. Others, not so much, like our email program. But it's not just the size of the challenge, it's also the quantity of the challenges. Pile up a whole bunch of reasonably small challenges, and our processing time is elongated. I can open up a bunch of Word documents. I can open up email. I can open up a variety of programs that none of them by themselves and none of them with just one or two others would cause any problem. But I could have so many applications open on my computer that suddenly it's bogged down trying to do multiple things at the same time. Got nothing to do with brain power. every brain, every computer needs sufficient time to process. I can't give you a specific time frame for yours. I mean, there are far too many factors that are involved, like how you're feeling physically, mentally, emotionally, what else is going on in your life, including at home. When are these challenges hitting you? Are they arriving during a time of day when you're just kind of physically and kind of naturally and emotionally and mentally at your peak? Or are they hitting you when it's the lull for you? How was the challenge announced to you? Who delivered the message and how? You and I both know that's important. What's the immediacy of the challenge? And who's around you? Who's around you right now to help you with it? And what's the scope and what's the scale of this problem? And how real is this problem? I mean, does it look and sound worse than it really is, or is it really, really bad? All of these factors and tons more, they impact the time that you need to properly process the information. Some people, you know people, and maybe you're one of them. Maybe you're a person who can process things very quickly, but you know there are other people in your life, they need a lot more time to process it. You can't do anything about that. Man, it's processing speed. We need what we need. One trick is to do exactly what we do with our computer. What do you do with your computer when it's bogging down? Yeah, we shut down all the non-essential programs. If you're in the middle of a Word document and you've clicked save and you get that beach ball, you're like, oh man, I don't want to lose these. I don't want to lose this. Or maybe it's a spreadsheet. I don't want to lose these changes. You immediately go looking for any other programs that you've got that you can shut down in hopes that that program will process. It's exactly what you have to do. You have to do the same thing in your head. Whatever projects were on your agenda, all the ones that can now be pushed to the back burner, they need to be tabled for the time being. Everything that's not a right now thing, tapping into your processing power, needs to be shut down. You can come back to that stuff later when you've got more processing power. But right now, you need all your processing power for this thing. Now, this is a mistake that many overconfident leaders make. They think they have more processing power than is available. They think they have an i7, but they've only got an i3. Geek speak. Risk frying your hard drive, and then you're going to be worthless. Or you can recognize that your life is a limited resource that you must manage. Stress kills. Now, we don't want to think that it can happen to us, but business leaders die all the time because they've overdone it and they've neglected themselves and they've joined the ranks of past people who have gone on. Don't do that. When you focus solely on the most critical challenge at hand, you will be able to better process it and then decide wisely. So that's step number one. Number two, you must consider worst-case scenarios, but do not neglect the positive scenarios. Your job as a CEO, a founder, an owner, a leader, is to minimize risks and to maximize opportunities. That's your job. That requires that you consider what might go wrong and to protect yourself and the company from it. Every good leader has to do this. Not every good leader develops the habit, though, of thinking about how you might turn this to your advantage. Great leaders do. And since this is about growing great, that's what we want to do. Now, this is not some pie-in-the-sky hope. No, this is a strategic approach to the problem. And you're going to need a lot of self-discipline to engage in this if you haven't been doing it. You're not just going to instantly be great at this, but you can grow great to do this, but you need to start today. If you will commit to the process of looking for how you might make this problem work to your benefit, then you can train yourself. And by the way, you can also train your executive team to engage in that process every single time a challenge comes up. No, you're not always going to be able to pull it off, but sometimes you will. And you know this has happened. Sometimes this has just happened to you through serendipity. A problem has turned out to be kind of a saving grace. I want you to practice making your business grow, making your leadership grow, making your team's leadership grow by better managing troubles and opportunities and looking for the way that you can turn them to an advantage. Next, believe that you can get it done and then challenge yourself to find a way. Now, we've already said that great leaders see the future first. So if we assume that you have the ability to see a positive outcome, and you do, you have that ability, we know you have that ability, then all that's left is to find out a way to get it done. See the positive outcome. It doesn't have to be a challenge. Make it a goal. Do it consistently. Do it constantly. Company leaders or owners typically have revenue goals. Do you really believe in your revenue goal? What is your revenue goal right now? Is your revenue goal just wishful thinking? Now, I'm all for stretch goals, we call them. Those goals that we really need to stretch in order to achieve. But it's ridiculous to have a revenue goal that nobody believes in. I can't tell you how many companies I engage and they've got a revenue goal and there's not anybody in the company that believes in it. Operating a growing business is not about being a good fiction writer. It's about having a grasp on what we can accomplish with the resources that are at our disposal. Too many companies have revenue goals that are never met, and as a result, optimism is never established. It's never achieved. There's never anything to celebrate. It's just doom and gloom. And instead, there's this constant, ongoing defeat. Yeah, that's not how you win. And it's not how you build a culture that knows how to win. No, instead, I'm encouraging you to be realistic in the future that you see happening. Really believe it. And if you can't, then review it and change it. I mean, why set a revenue goal of $10 million when you and nobody on your team thinks that it's remotely possible? But you could set it at $8.75 million and believe it's a stretch, but know that it's possible. Really know it's possible. Here's why that's important. Chasing unrealistic goals robs you of optimism. Your brain will not embark on the quest to figure out ways to accomplish the unrealistic goal. You know this is true. I want you to stop and think about this. Here's what's going to happen to you with an unrealistic goal, because it happens to all of us. We just tell ourselves all the reasons why it's impossible. And then we tell ourselves, this is stupid. This is ridiculous. I don't know why I'm doing this. There's not one thing good about that. It will not serve you to grow great. Instead, establish a goal that can be easily explained. I'm not saying easily reached. Easily explained. How did you come up with that goal? What influenced that goal? As the owner or the CEO, you have got to be able to explain and convince your team that this goal is achievable. Remember, great leaders see the future first. That's only going to happen if they know the thought that you put behind it. I will regularly hear executives talk about how their CEO or their owner set some goal. And they will often refer to it as it was pulled out of a certain orifice. Don't do that. Do not do that. Goals are tough enough to achieve when everybody is on board. They are impossible when nobody, including you, thinks it's possible or thinks it's going to happen. Once that reasonable, and I use the word reasonable not to convey that it's easy, but to convey that there's some solid logic and thought behind it. Once that reasonable goal is established, the entire conversation changes. The conversation in your head, the conversation with your executive team, the conversation with everybody in your organization, it all changes. No longer is everybody distracted by the ridiculousness of the goal and saying, well, the boss pulled that out of there, you know what. No, instead, now everybody is engaged in finding ways to make it happen. The whole question changes. It changes from what kind of crazy goal is this? We're never going to do this to how can we get this done? Even if you're a solopreneur like me, these two powerful forces, and I know I've gone long today. I would apologize, but nah, I'm not going to. This is important stuff. This is really important stuff. Even if you're a solopreneur like me, these two powerful forces of business building and career building, they're in play. Overcoming loneliness and amping up confidence through optimism. Now, you can push against these all that you want, and you can try to go it alone, and you can try to be the contrarian. It's just going to take you a lot longer, and the road's going to be much tougher, assuming that you ever make it. And besides that, it's going to be miserable. Even if you're a loner, it's going to be miserable. You won't go faster. You won't go further. It's not possible. You need to align yourself with people who can serve you. And I suggest, yes, I do, I suggest looking at a peer advisory group, because employees are not in a position to do this for you. They're beholden to you. You hold the power of their job. Outside advisors, they have you as a client. No, you need a group. You need a group with no vested interest other than to help you grow great. There's plenty of opportunities out there to find these groups. Find them. They're worth the investment. I'm starting a small one in a super narrow niche of elder law attorneys who are owners, principals. And I'm just looking for 10 to pay a very nominal monthly amount to be in what I call the Founders Club. If you care to see what I'm doing, not that it would fit you, but it may fit you. But if it doesn't, you just want to kind of get some sense of how these can work. Yeah, click on the link. There's a link over at the website, growgreat.com. The great benefit of such groups is that they can also help you with this second force of optimism. Do not undervalue encouragement. I know you may think that you're above it. You may think that you don't need it, but you're wrong. You do need it. We all need it. Look at your life, including all the skills that you bring, all the experience that you bring to run your company, and I want you to think of it as a fuel tank. Gasoline does not magically appear in your car's fuel tank. Okay, if you have an electric car, yeah, the batteries don't just charge themselves. It won't magically appear in your life either. You have to be intentional. You have to be intentional to put fuel into your car. If you don't, your car is going to run out of fuel. So I'm telling you today, fuel up. Fuel up. You're going to need every drop of fuel that you can get. And why wouldn't you get all that you can? Why just continue to pour it out on the pavement? Put it to use and then keep putting in more. Well, hopefully, surely by now, I've spent enough time driving this point home. Find things that you can believe in and then bet on yourself and bet on your team and be confident that you're going to win. The website tells it all. Grow great. That's what I want for you. And there it is. It's in the can, as they say, kids. Episode 4037. Go over to the website, growgreat.com. There's lots of other episodes and hopefully some helpful resources for you. I would appreciate it if you would subscribe to the podcast. You can just go to the website, growgreat.com. And in the navigation, click on that subscribe to podcast. And it doesn't matter what device you have, it will show you how to subscribe. That's my ask. I hope that all is well with you. I want you to be optimistic. I don't care if you're candidate won or lost. Do not despair. Be confident. Future is going to be bright. We are going to do our dead level best to make it so. Randy Cantrell coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio.